to another Friday night on Kayak Fishing Radio, the Wild West Show. This is Isaac the Nothing Miller. Still hoping we can get Dennis Spike in. Oh, and here he is, Dennis Spike himself, calling in at the 11th hour. How's it going?
I was on cue, Isaac. You were right on top of me. Welcome to the Wild West Show, everybody, on blogtalkkayakfishingradio.com. How's it going, Isaac?
It's going pretty well.
Been a wild week in the Wild West, I tell you.
Man, it's been great.
Everything's going good. Yeah, there's just so much going on. I think we're gearing up for a really big, fat kayak fishing season. It's been an awful mild winter all over the country with some crazy weather. But here on the West Coast, you know, even though you're giving us reports of rain and swollen creeks, it isn't as much as we get in a normal year.
No, no. You know,
and the further south you get, the more you see that. But the salmon and steelhead, especially the steelhead right now, are going off in the inland waters. Guys are getting out on rivers that most Californians don't even know the names of, right around Sacramento, Modesto, Lodi, California. Ooh. And our boy Dan at Arbuckle at Headwaters Kayaks has been getting out and just slaying. He said he had a 2-foot steelhead. And, you know, most of them are much smaller schooling fish, usually 12, 14 inches. But he had a nice 2-foot steelhead that he lost right at the boat. It popped the hook.
Oh,
as good as landed, the way I see it. That's a
touching the leader counts, right?
I was never real technical, you know.
I think that's IFGA rules or something like that. If you touch the leader, it counts.
Yep, yep, it's a keeper.
I'm actually going steelhead fishing myself on Sunday.
Are you now?
Oh, yeah. Getting stoked about that. Going to hit up the Sandy River, just barely outside of Portland, Oregon.
Amazingly, I know the Sandy River, and I spent a couple of nights in Sandy, I would say about 1982.
The river looks nothing like it did back then.
I'll bet the whole area has seen big changes, too. It used to be a quiet little suburbia.
The biggest changes are there's no dams on the Sandy River anymore.
Oh, really? They busted the dam down, huh?
Oh, yeah. Been gone.
Really? Now, how did that affect everything downriver?
You know, all the holes are gone. All the holes have changed. And that's it.
Very interesting.
Yeah, you know.
Completely changed the geography of the river.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Has there been a rebound in the healthy fishery since the dam disappeared?
Oh,
and how long has it been? Moment.
It's always been a great fishery in the Sandy River.
Oh, really?
It's always been great, and if anything, it's better.
So losing the dam just improved things in the whole course.
Yeah. And
what's that,
you know,
flowing into the Columbia?
Yep, right at the Columbia.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. I spent a lot of time up there, actually. I did a lot of fishing shows at, what's the center by the raceway? Is that the Expo Center?
That's the, yeah, the Portland Expo Center, yeah.
Right, and that's not too far from the Columbia. I used to stay at one of the hotels up there.
That's right on the Columbia River also.
I can't wait to get back, and it looks like my time is coming. They've got good reports for the salmon down here, Isaac. I know you guys take it for granted, but we don't get salmon all the time. And it looks like the fishery is making a good, the coho fishery is making a good recovery, and the season starts early, and it might go real late. They're saying it could go as late as into November this year.
Yeah, I've been hearing some good news up here as well. The ocean salmon fishing, which is a little bit more difficult by kayak, but it's definitely doable, especially if you get a good weather day. It's not a problem at all.
It's funny because when I moved to this north central part of California, and for all intents and purposes, anything above San Francisco, everybody calls California. They told me about the big surf, the high waves, the open exposure to the coast, and how much bigger it was. And everybody talked on the sense of, well, we really don't fish in the winter. And the truth is, and I knew it would prove true on my kayak, there will be years where we don't get out, where during the winter months especially, but it can be late fall and it can be into the spring too, where we have such horrible conditions at sea that there are so many storms and systems going on out in the Pacific, that even if we don't see rain, we can see high surf and undoable conditions. But the reality is most years we are able to, with our kayaks, find the right spot, the right window of weather opportunity, and get out most every month of the year, and sometimes on several occasions.
Yeah, and it's all about keeping an eye on the weather.
It really is. And, you know, it's amazing.
The more time you do it, the more time you spend watching the weather, seeing what happens, you'll start recognizing patterns that, you know, weathermen aren't looking at because they don't care about that type of thing. But you can start recognizing patterns and say, hey, you know what? I bet this Friday looks like a really good day. You see that on Monday. You check again on Tuesday. You check again on Wednesday. And on, you know, come Thursday, you're like, shoot, I'm going fishing tomorrow.
You look at a much bigger picture, what direction the weather's coming from, what the pattern of the system seem to be, and also comparing. And, you know, you talk about this. This is such a great topic, Isaac, because so many anglers don't take advantage of the tools we have available for us. And right down to the tides and the moon phases. So many anglers don't pay attention. But I think with the kayaks, we get so many sheer opportunities to get out on the water that paying attention to these factors really makes a big difference, and we start to see more opportune moments that we would want to fish given that planning that we're already doing, paying attention to everything. And one thing that I noticed is when I'm reading the buoys, and NOAA gives us such great information. I mean, it's public information, all these fantastic scientific buoys that are measuring everything, and then satellites on top of it. And the NOAA websites are now, and not only the NOAA websites, a lot of, I use swellinfo.com, and that's a surf website that basically, you know, surfing and kayak fishing go hand in hand when you're doing the coastal thing, because we both use the same areas for launching and landing and for surfing the waves. And it amazes me that I can read those buoys and it'll say 6 or 8 or 10 feet. And I can go out to where those forecasts were and have a very doable day.
Yeah.
But really where we draw the line here is in that 6 to 7 foot zone.
Exactly.
When the swell on the buoys reads 6 to 7 foot, while you will find exceptions, that's really the limit when you're going to be able to get out or not.
Yeah. See, and I mentioned the whole, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday thing, because today would have been a killer day. Would have been a killer day to call in sick because it was 4 foot. At 13 seconds. Would have been a killer day to be out there.
That's just a light. That could lull you to sleep on a kayak.
Yeah.
Now, would you be going out to the coast for that kind of fishing, or are you just heading out to the river?
No, I'd be going to the coast, man. I need that salt water.
So where's the coastal access for Portland, Oregon?
You know, the closest and, you know, easiest place is Pacific City. And I use Magic Seaweed for my surf forecast. I love what they have going on there.
That's MagicSeaweed.com?
MagicSeaweed.com.
Yeah.
And you can dial in Cape Kiwanda, which is right there in Pacific City, right where we launch our kayaks into the surf. And they got surf cams, so you can look out at the rock offshore, Haystack Rock, where everyone does their fishing, and see exactly what's going on. You can see people out there fishing on good days, you know. I was watching that all week long. I was like, oh, man, Friday's going to be a good day. Friday's going to be a good day.
And it proved true. It just held.
It did.
All it takes is a little bit of high pressure, a little bit of the right change, and you get the perfect conditions. I think a lot of what that mentality of, you can't fish in the winter, is it was pretty much just the hardest core guys who were going out there with their boats to fish for the salmon or the halibut or the albacore. And a lot of times, I mean, a lot of years, and you'll get it year after year, when the albacore are running, you're out there miles and miles offshore looking at water all the time. And even with salmon fishing, you know, guys in the Northwest are so used to going out in 10 and 12-foot seas where they're just rolling around, but you're catching fish, and that's what it's all about. Yeah. But the reality is that, you know, if there's not a big storm out there, if there's not a system or activity in the Pacific, if there's not wind, there's no reason for there to be swell. And if there's no swell, you got a day of paddling on your hands.
Yeah. Today would have been a good day to get out. Unfortunately, you know, there are those work responsibilities that you have to take care of.
As far as reports go in the San Francisco Bay Area, my personal report is my last report when I came back with 40 female crabs to release. And I got a call from Gerard the Paella Man yesterday, and he said that the big crabs are back, and somebody had a 2.5-pound Dungeness, which is a pretty fair one. So I'm going to meet a fellow in the morning, put a couple of pots out, bait it up with a half a chicken each, and see how I do, because I got a taste for Dungeness again. In the San Francisco Bay itself, and I don't believe you're allowed to fish for Dungeness inside San Francisco Bay, but every bait you put anywhere near the bottom is getting attacked by tiny crabs.
Yeah.
And the fishing is tough. They're not, I didn't see one striper report out of San Francisco Bay. And even with all those crabs a-crawling, they said they're everywhere. They're at the Golden Gate Bridge. They're all through the bays. And they're running up the creek. So any baits you get close to the bottom, you're going to catch nothing but crabs. But a few guys have hit those rivers and hit those deep channels around the bay, and they're still pulling a couple sturgeon out of there within the slot limit, something I've never done on my kayak, and I'm really excited to do it here in the near future. The salmon season looks like it could be opening in a matter of weeks, maybe 3 at the worst, 4 weeks down the road, and I'm pretty darned excited about that. We're going to see some halibut and leopard sharks moving into Tomales Bay as the crabs start to thin out a little bit towards the season closer in June, which I guess is only a few more months away. And that's and besides that, the steelhead in the creeks and rivers are doing really good, and our conservation efforts up here are really proven to be fruitful, and no complaint.
Right on. Well, hey, anytime you get up here to Portland, we can go sturgeon fishing. It's a catch and release fishery year round. We've always got sturgeon here. We can do that in a heartbeat.
And is that all Columbia River fishery? Oh, you
Columbia,
mean the catch and release year round, so you can fish them year round.
Yep, and they're always here.
Huh.
They're always here. The Columbia River and the Willamette River.
And to remind readers, in the Columbia River, you get how many days of take sturgeon fishing every year?
You know what? I have not
one,
taped
four.
That. The Columbia is, the lower Columbia, if I remember correctly, is still open.
It has more liberal take rules.
It is. So the Willamette River is the one that opened and closed in 2 days.
Well, that's good, though, because that's going to give the Willamette a chance. You know, the fact that I say that's good, Isaac, brings me up to another issue, a topic, I should say, that's become an issue. And you remember last week we heard from Paul Leibowitz about the director of the California Department of Fish and Game Commission, who went to Idaho and legally shot a trophy mountain lion, posed for it, posted that picture on a hunting website, and should soon be thrown out of office here in California, pretty much because it's illegal to hunt mountain lions in California. And the fact that the director of the Fish and Game Commission went to Idaho and did it sets a bad example for some people. But unfortunately, that is a very vocal minority. And I had all kinds of points and principles to that, and hopefully I'll come back to it.
Okay.
And
I've got some good
thanks for the save, Isaac.
Yeah, I got some good news on the conservation front.
I like that.
There you go. The Restore Act passed through the U.S. Senate this week. The Restore Act basically says all the money that the U.S. fined for the Gulf oil spill, goes to the Gulf Coast states. That was in question. If the Restore Act didn't get passed, the billions of dollars in fines could have gone to anything. It could have gone to fixing the pothole on I-5 that drives you nuts. But it shouldn't have. It belongs in the Gulf, and that's where that money is going to stay. So that was
The historic Gulf Restoration and Land and Water Conservation Bill. And I'm glad you explained it to me. The press release came across my desk today, and I never got a chance to look at it. And that's so incredibly important. Then I'll let you get back to it. Because in every state in the union, our money, our resources for fishing licenses, there were directed funds that went into fishery restoration and into the source of where it came from. And a lot of that has been diluted seriously over the years.
Yeah.
And I'm a big fan of Keep America Fishing, Isaac. They're keeping us informed. I don't know if that's where you got the information, but they're keeping us informed, and they are really acting with a strong lobby for anglers.
Yeah, I got the information from my good buddy Teague Stouffer over at Recycled Fish. He was at
That's even better, man.
Yeah, he was in Washington, D.C. the other week speaking to all the senators saying, hey, this bill is important. We need to pass this bill. He helped lay down some of that footwork, speaking on behalf of anglers.
And where is he from?
He's the director of Recycled Fish. He's in Oklahoma City.
And what's Recycled Fish? I hate to be...
Yeah, Recycled Fish is a nonprofit organization. Promoting a lifestyle of stewardship on and off the water. They're talking, you know, catch and release. It's a little bit more than that because we're totally cool with people taking home fish for the dinner plate too. Cleaning up on the river.
Promoting
the
a harmonious balance in the fisheries?
Yeah, the fisheries
like
and
that.
Beyond the fisheries.
I look forward to looking at their website and getting their information.
Yeah. Recycledfish.org. I can talk about them all night long because I'm also the PR director.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Such a convoluted little industry this kayak fishing is. No, for lack of a better term. No, that's a great thing, Isaac, and I like hearing about more lobbies doing good things.
Yeah.
You know, I talked to somebody earlier today about, I got a call from a guy I would never think would worry about the fisheries because I've kind of taken an attitude with all the closures coming down on the coast, and I'm not just talking about California, it's everywhere. But with our kayaks, we're in kind of a blessed position because we have better access than everybody else. And we can get on the bite easier than people, even when they're shutting down our access and our ability to fish certain areas. But I took a call from a guy in Santa Monica who I would have thought pretty much thought the same way that I did, but it wasn't. He's just so truly disturbed about all these areas he's gone to pretty much all his life, not pretty much, all of his life, and can't access anymore. And now half of Malibu, or seemingly half of Malibu, and that's not too far off, is closed to fishing now. And we're in such a lucky position in that regard for getting out. And I think the whole point that I was getting to is I became very lazy for most of my career, and I mean that personally, my career as a kayak fisherman, because I was able to catch a lot of big fish, and I got into the mindset of targeting big fish. But I think we even mentioned it on a past show about the small hook thing.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
And I've been having all these conversations with people, and I realized today that the area in Malibu, like Point Doom, which was one of my favorite spots to go rock fishing, and I got to tell you, Point Doom was hurt. I mean, Point Doom was overfished many years ago. It's taken a long time to recover. It was on the road to recovery, and all of Malibu, like the rest of California, was on the road to sustainable fisheries until they just decided through MLPA to preserve all these massive areas. And it's just not only hurting so many people, but it's hurting the fishery that they're trying to save. Because now we're looking at areas that with limited access are going to get so much pressure. And our growth of the sport is a big part of that pressure. And what's going to happen if we don't have not only strong lobbies that are funded and looking out for our interests as recreational anglers, but, like you're bringing up, new lobbies too, because we need fresh blood, we need fresh voices, we need fresh zones of representation, and hopefully one day we'll have a kayak fishing lobby. Wouldn't that be an awesome thing, to get the kayak manufacturers behind a lobby that was supporting angler access in the and the recreational fishing future? But now I'm just blabbering.
I have a feeling that's coming
Well, I'm hoping so.
But in the same breath,
Isaac, if we don't act now as anglers, what's going to happen is when areas like Fort Ross, up where I am, and Leo Carrillo and the L.A. Ventura County line, which are now going to get a lot more pressure, not only from kayak anglers, but from boat anglers, from divers and spear fishermen, which is a big up-and-coming sport. Or I should say a sport that's gaining a lot of steam, spearfishing. Also from crabbing and from abalone diving as well. And if we are not alert and awake and attentive lobbies representing recreational fishing, it's going to be easier to close the remaining areas than it is for them to close them, being the enemy, than us to keep them open. All right, enough ranting about that. I'm going to stay off the politics for the rest of the night.
Oh, no, we're not.
Yeah, it'll never happen.
I'm going to one more conservation topic. Another big news. I don't know if you've been following the Keystone pipeline.
I have indeed.
Yep, and that bombed again today.
It bombed. It's done, right?
For now.
For now.
For now. Republicans, of course, keep saying we're gonna get this pipeline.
It could generate 25 or 30 jobs, I'm telling you.
Yeah, you know, and so can a couple coffee shops.
I think about the politics a lot and what's going on, and you know, I get so wrapped up with the fishery politics and the outdoors, and it's beyond the fishery for me. It's the outdoorsman. It's our way of life. It's how I see the society changing and wanting to change. And, you know, I've always been a big fan of a democratic society gets along, respects each other's positions, as long as they're legal. And it's important that we don't let fishing, recreational fishing, and hunting and gathering become illegal. And speaking of gathering, are they big on mushrooming up in your neck of the woods?
Oh, that's the chanterelle.
You just drooled like Homer.
We have the chanterelles, man. That season's come and gone at this point. But, oh, yeah, we got chanterelles. We have Oregon truffles. So, yeah, we know a couple of things about mushrooms up here.
So I dehydrated about an ounce of black chanterelles and a couple ounces of white chanterelles.
Nice.
And it is the most amazing fungus. I mean, there's such wonderful shrooms growing through the woods. But, you know, people don't realize, it doesn't matter what state in the union you live in, there is fungus growing, edible fungus growing around you. And it is a good gathering thing.
Yeah. You know, like we have...
If you teach someone to crab, they will show you to gather.
Yes, they will. That's very true. Yeah, yeah, we love our mushrooms up here. Like I said, we have the chanterelles. We got our Oregon truffles. We got those in the store right now for somewhere in the neighborhood of $30 an ounce. So,
a fresh truffle grown under the oak trees?
Oh, yeah.
Really now?
Yeah.
I've never Oregon heard of that.
Truffles. Oh, yeah, Oregon
I've
truffles.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah, like I said, $30 an ounce.
Well, you know, it's a truffle after all.
It is. Oh, man. I walk by every day. I open up that jar and take a deep whiff. It's so wonderful.
I ate a new seafood this week, something I had never had before. And I was absolutely blown away and it was called a gooseneck barnacle.
Uh-huh.
You've heard of them?
Oh, yeah. I didn't know they were edible. I didn't know that they
Not only are they edible, but in Spain, I believe Portugal and Morocco, they are the most expensive by weight seafood that you can get. There, you need a federal permit in Spain to harvest them off the rocks. And they are the most desirable Spanish seafood, the gooseneck barnacle. And for people who don't know, and I'm going to lay a big caution on top of this statement of excitement, and probably wouldn't be promoting it on a much bigger venue than Kayak Fishing Radio, only because it's a fragile little fishery. It has the potential to be fragile. And when you're out gathering mussels off the rocks in the intercoastal tide line, you will see these barnacles that have a little acorn head on them, which is actually the foot. You know what I'm talking about, Isaac?
Yeah.
And if you dig out your mussels and dig out those barnacles, some of them are 6 inches long, and they're big, thick tubes, and they are actually not a mollusk, and they're not similar to other barnacles. They are a crustacean. And if you get a handful of them and put them in heavily salted boiling water, they live in a limestone casing and bring in food through their foot, so they virtually live upside down on the rocks. And when you pull that, after boiling them, pull that limestone casing, you have a very disgusting-looking piece of seafood that is absolutely delicious and can definitely be compared, not so much in texture, but in flavor, to shrimps.
Really? Yeah,
and I will make them for you. I look forward to it. Now, here's the downside of this barnacle, and it's already happened to Morocco, Spain, and Portugal. The downside is that you have to remove you have to remove mussel bed on the rocks.
Right.
And it takes a while for that to come back. So you have to be very, very attentive and sensitive to the area wherever you gather mussels. And that's just not barnacles, that's mussels too.
Yeah.
So when you're gathering mussels, you want to go to an area that sees very little mussel gathering pressure, and sometimes that means driving an extra 10 miles for most people. But it makes a lot of sense to do that, because if you look at the beaches of San Diego, Santa Monica, and Santa Barbara, and beaches around the coastal United States where people concentrate, you don't have any shellfish left on the rocks, and you have to go out, how do you say, to the boonies? To find healthy mussel beds, or you have to go offshore to the oil pilings. But the reality is that we have very healthy mussel beds in California, especially in the more remote areas. And if we respectfully harvest them, you can take up to 10 pounds of black mussels every day. And that is more than most anybody would need to feed three families.
I'm going to have to look into this gooseneck barnacles, because I know we've got them all up and down the Oregon coast as well.
It is a very interesting animal. And it's taught me a lot about... I'm sorry?
We'll have to see what our harvest laws are on those.
Yeah, they don't have much in place for California on the barnacle. You know, again, I think one of the reasons that a lot of people haven't come up from San Francisco to clean the rocks on the Sonoma coast is because the fish and game regulations allow you to take mussels and barnacles off the rocks by hand only.
Mm-hmm.
And while it's okay to wear a glove, it's a very tedious process.
Would
probably take a couple hours. No, it would probably take an hour to two to fill up a 5-gallon bucket. And again, a 5-gallon bucket is more than anybody could legally take. 10 pounds probably only comes up, 5 inches on a 5-gallon bucket.
Yeah.
Yeah, they weigh a lot. But the wild mussels are just sensational. They're great. They're flavorful. They're clean. I've never had an issue with sand. These are very clean animals for shellfish. Mm-hmm. exciting stuff, I tell you. You have the razor clams on your beaches, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
What
you
other mollusks?
That's
Neptune's kitchen for me.
Yeah, we've got coming up soon the ODFW. They're pulling tags for urchins, of course. Super tasty. Very, very few people get the opportunity to pick urchins here in Oregon.
Is that because of the low tide or because they don't dive?
I don't know. Good question. I just know they have a very limited availability. Same thing with abalone.
I think the further up the coast you get, I don't think there's as many urchins as further south.
I would tend to disagree with that because I've seen...
Maybe I'm wrong, but I know that the fishery is strong from Santa Barbara south. And I have yet to see, I know guys dive urchins up here, but I have yet to see anybody work in an urchin operation out of Bodega Bay.
Not many people here doing it.
Called it from the other room that, yeah, they do. So there are guys out working the urchins up here.
Just not
That's
so many.
That's another delicious little animal.
Oh, I love me some
uni. Yeah, the egg sack from that. I was down at... below Ensenada, below La Bufadora, the blowhole, at a place called Punto Santo Tomas, which is a remote frontier fishing village on the Pacific in northern Baja California, Mexico. And one of the frontier fishermen, or as we called them, poachers, walked up to me with a cut-off gallon milk bottle, and he had some seawater in it and a couple pounds of uni that he had just cracked out of the shell. And he offered it up to me like, you know, I wouldn't be interested in that, you know. And it was almost kind of like a challenging the macho kayak angler guy thing. And I sucked one of those down, and I tell you, it was butter.
Okay.
It tasted like salty butter from the sea. And I've loved uni ever since.
All depends on the time of month.
Is that what the deal? You know, I think that's with everything. And with those gooseneck barnacles, I also noticed it's what part of the bed you're in. Because the first day I harvested them, I got really big, fat, meaty barnacles after I boiled them. And then the second day, I went to a different group of rocks that was in a different area. And although I got some big, long, meat, fat ones, after I boiled them down, they weren't as meaty as the ones I had the day before. Now, I think this is the spawning time, and they say the optimum time to gather the barnacles. But, no, that does make a difference for all the mollusks, crustaceans, that kind of thing. Time of year is definitely important.
Yeah. With the urchins, it's monthly. You got to know what's going on with the moon. Because that's whether or not the roe is going to be fully formed or not. So
what's the best time for that, on the full moon?
If I remember correctly, it is the full moon.
Very interesting.
Yeah, within 24 hours of the full moon.
It's interesting that their reproductive system can have such an attachment to the lunar schedule.
So do the tides.
Nature is amazing.
Yeah.
Not much of a lobster season in Southern California. I don't know how the commercial guys did, but the recreational guys could have done a lot better in other years, and that's coming to a close shortly, sometime this month. And the rockfish season opened down there, but that was the key to JJ's complaint, that his old rockfish fishing grounds are closed. And the truth is that the fishery, the rockfish, the lingcod, the cabazon, and the rockfish haven't recovered, in my estimation and experience, enough in Southern California to open a season that's going to put pressure on the remaining opening areas. You know, and what I was talking about before, about my opinion of when I say things like, oh, it's okay to close this place or that place. Well, I don't believe it's okay to close anything permanently. I believe closing something for study and rehabilitation and reopening the resource for anglers is the way it's supposed to be done. but there seems to be a preservationist movement that has taken a course of legal action for complete lifetime closures. And I get so far off track when I'm ranting.
All right.
Sorry about that. But I have some really, really good news to recover from that guffaw. I don't know if I ever mentioned it on kayakfishingradio.com, but back in, and I'll tell you when the date was, all the way back in the early years of the sport, on October 3rd, 1998, me and kayakfishing.com produced the first kayak fishing tournament that was ever held. And that is one of those distinctions that means very little, and I'm really, really proud of it. And I did two more tournaments, and that one was in San Diego at Shelter Island. And it was very cool because they had a great park in the middle of the bay there and, you know, just a wonderful venue. And I opened it up to everybody, and I was keen on conservation at the very onset. So I had a unique set of rules where to reduce the kill and not require people to bring in 10 dead fish, we did a total species weight. And we had X number of fish that you could bring in, and those, the combination, the weight of the combination of those fish. And I think that I watched a lot of tournaments that grew after that use similar methods to reduce take, keep a higher sense of conscientiousness, and add competition to kayak fishing events by giving somebody an opportunity to release a fish to catch a bigger one. And I think that makes it a little more sporting and competitive. And after all of these years, now that I've got the RTM kayaks thing going on, we have scheduled our next tournament, and I think it's going to be a doozy. I have barely announced it until the page is up at kayakfishing.com. There will be a tournament page.
Let me grab my calendar here. Give me a second.
It's going to be a doozy, Isaac. This one would be worth showing up for the raffle alone, but it's going to be a lot more than that. And it's going to be on October the 27th, that's Halloween or prior to Halloween weekend.
All right.
And it's the last West Coast California tournament of the year.
Cool.
I love the fall, the end of October, Isaac. All the big fish are moving up and spawning.
Yeah. All right.
And remember, not too long ago, just the year before last, we couldn't have fished that long because the season closed so much earlier because they were in more serious stages of recovering the fishery through extended closures. But we're doing something, you know. I've always been really proud of my tournaments, and more than anything because everybody's had a really good time. They've always been family events with kids. And we're guesstimating that for this event we're going to, and it's at Ocean Cove, which is in the north part of Sonoma County. It's above Jenner, and it's about a 20-minute drive about north of the mouth of the Russian River on Highway 1. So it's between Bodega Bay in Fort Bragg, just above Jenner, California, just above the Russian River. And not many people know there's an area called Fort Ross, it's an old Russian fort right on the coast, a little historic area, where the Russian fur traders enslaved kayak hunters, Eskimo kayak hunters, and brought them down here, and they lived at Fort Ross and took them all the way as far south as Baja California, to wipe out the pinnipeds. Where are they now, he jokes. Anyway, we're doing the tournament at Ocean Cove. It is sponsored by kayakfishing.com and RTM Kayaks. And we want, since RTM is new to the better part of the United States, we really want to get the name around. We don't have any dealers that will be irritated by our giving away a lot of boats. So first prize, we're giving away a outfitted fishing kayak. And for second, third, and fourth prizes, we are giving away outfitted fishing kayaks from RTM.
Wow.
So that is four fishing kayaks are going to be awarded to the winners of this tournament. But that's not all. We expect a lot of people. And we're going to have, you know, what a lot of the West Coast events do potlucks. It doesn't matter. You could feed people three meals a day as the tournament host, and people would still have their own kitchens. However, for the ease of travel, since this is a not as remote as Shelter Cove for most people, but it is remote for a lot of people, even people living in the city. And it's a weekend camping trip. We are going to serve, we've got the world-renowned paella chef, Gerard. That's Gerard, G-E, Gerard with an E. Gerard'sPaella.com. This guy flies all over the world to cook paella. He was challenged in a throwdown by the celebrity chef Bobby Flay.
I thought that was him. I was going to say,
and he whooped him. He whooped him. And anyway, I asked Gerard one time.
Walked out.
What's that?
Of course, Gerard walked out in the ocean, harvested his own seafood, and brought it back.
Did he do that on the episode?
Yeah.
Nice. Well, the horse gooseneck mussels, gooseneck barnacles go in that harvested paella now. And he's also an expert fungus gatherer. Anyway, he is a kayak fisherman. And he has offered his services to cook the entire tournament, his paella, on Friday night. And on Saturday night, after the tournament and after the awards, we are hosting the Trencherman's Feast, which is surf and turf and things that fly and a whole lot more.
Well, I guess I won't bother making my homemade tartar sauce for this event.
I think we might need it. I said surf and turf. And surf. I'm actually, we are also having a Sunday brunch cook-off. There are so many great camp chefs at these kayak fishing events, both men and women, that I wouldn't be surprised to see some kids step into the kitchen, into the galley. But we're going to have a cook-off, and we're giving either a $100 prize or a 100-year-old Dutch oven, and it is the winner's choice to what
the prize is. One of the ones that you just got?
What's that?
One of the ones you just got? The Dutch ovens?
What, Dutch ovens?
Yeah.
No, we bought a new one for the event.
Okay.
We bought a not a new one. It's an old one. But no, I'm not giving up my pot, my pan.
What,
are you kidding me? I was just in there coveting them before the show started. I'm a big fan of cast iron.
Well, October.
Yeah, but we're excited about that. And I think I like the Sunday brunch thing because they can go anywhere with it. It gives them even more room.
I'll write that down. I have to run that past the wife because
October the 27th. I suggest you bring the wife. We will cook for her.
Well, it's the 29th is my birthday.
Oh, fantastic!
And the 30th is our wedding anniversary. So
wow, maybe you need a weekend on the Sonoma coast.
You know, that could work out to my advantage. It could work. I'm liking it.
I'm really excited about it. We're working on the tournament rules right now and trying to make a real conservation effort towards this event. We want to do it for a long time. We've got wonderful people at the venue itself. Ocean Cove is, I don't know what it is, it's probably 20 or 30 or 40 acres on Highway 1. So they've got room. They've got a little store there on the backside of the highway, and on the front they've got an 80 to 100 site campground, RVs, on the bluff, ocean view, a road going down. And I'm talking by a road, I mean of 300 yards, going down to.
Oh, it sounds like we just lost you there, Spike. Going to keep my eye on things here for sure. Yep, he just dropped off. Keep my eye on things. Ocean Cove, California. I just happened to pull it up right now on Google Maps. Beautiful part of the country, that's for sure. We're north of Bodega Bay, which is, of course, north part of San Francisco, and just south of Fort Bragg, basically straight west from Sacramento, California. definitely looks like some very fishy water. Looking forward to seeing the info. Like I said, or like Spike said, info is coming soon to kayakfishing.com. And of course, we'll have more information here on Kayak Fishing Radio and on yakangler.com. We'll get that up on the events page for sure. Speaking of yakangler.com and events, Kayak Fishing Radio and events, you have to see the video for the Chokoloskee boondoggle. Granted, that took place in Florida. I wasn't there. Spike wasn't there. But still, great weekend for, if I remember correctly, somewhere near 30 kayak anglers that made the trek to Chokoloskee, Florida, which is a small island, and they spent a weekend of fishing and hanging out. There was a little raffle. There was some fish caught. There was a lot of food eaten, and people went home with a lot of prizes. We got Spike back on the line. Spike, I was just telling everyone, I don't know if you saw it or not, the Chokoloskee boondoggle video.
I haven't seen them yet. I got a whole stack of stuff in my email account to look at.
Yeah.
How'd it go?
It was cool. It was cool. I'm definitely jealous. I wish I was there.
It's like fishing Jurassic Park down there, man.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing that's weird. They're in salt water, and they're out paddling around, and they put a stick into the water, and they could stand up. That's weird to me.
It's skinny water. It's skinny water. I locked into a 20-pound Jack Crevalle, and I couldn't believe this thing. I mean, you could see the sand churning, the way it was turning up and ripping around. Finally broke me up on oyster bar, but I had a lot of good fight out of it, and it was a lot of fun. But it is. It's very prehistoric fishing down there. You can be in the skinniest water. Birds are screeching and flying out of the bush and the brush, and you can catch some incredibly big fish, and you just wouldn't think about it. And that's why they call it skinny water.
Yeah, it's weird to me. I grew up here. I'm used to deep water. You know, skinny water is 6 inches off the bank. You know, any further than that, you're swimming. I know Chip's son, the clone, hooked into a grouper down in the mangroves.
How big a grouper was that?
That was the one that got away.
But he had a good fight, huh?
He did. He did.
Wow, that's fish of a lifetime.
Right,
the clone is going to show us all something one day. And mm-hmm. then he's going to show it to us for the rest of our lives.
You know, I've already seen it. I was at the Georgia Kayak Fishing Tournament Trail in 2010 down.
How
in
cool
Georgia.
Is that?
And the clone was there. They had a youth category, and the clone took home a brand new Wilderness Systems Tarpon 120.
You know, I think I remember reading about that.
You know.
And he wasn't the only kid fishing either.
He was not. He
Good
was
for
not.
Him. How old is that boy?
I couldn't speak. I'm guessing 13, 14 by now.
Yeah, so he's just getting on to be a teenager by now.
Just getting on, yeah. And, he was tearing it up there in Georgia. He was tearing it up again the other weekend down in Florida.
Right on.
You know, yeah.
Well, maybe I can get some of the. I think we're going to have some people traveling from afar for the kayakfishing.com fall classic.
Yeah.
I know we're going to get a lot from Southern California, but I see some of the other events around here. And I think the timing is perfect, you know. I've noticed, especially, we have a lot of, and I don't want to say old people, and I don't want to say mature in the sense of old, but I think a lot of the kayak anglers are just, you know, we're thinking so far beyond that one-day party boat trip or that only trip to the mountains every, you know, once a year. And there's a lot of planning, and I think when people see that it's a fall event on the coast and how fishy it is up here, that and I don't think those four boats are going to hurt the attendance either.
No. You know, I was telling the listeners when you got cut off,
I just brought up Ocean Cove, California onto Google Maps. And that looks pretty fishy. I see a lot of kelp beds.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's funny because we went on to their website, which is oceancove.org. And you really need a plane or a helicopter to photograph this place, and they haven't. They've just gone to a couple of high spots. And what Ocean Cove is, I don't know, you can see it on the Google Maps, it's a fairly deep finger cove of several hundred yards.
Yeah.
And it's funny because my buddy Nick, who was 8 years in the British Army, fought at the Falklands, got blown out of a hole when a guy poured gasoline in a diesel generator and they went to fire it up. And he's a tough cookie. And a stocky Englishman, looks like he'd sink like a brick, and one of the most seaworthy guys I know. And we're coming in one day, and he was paddling the Hurricane Phoenix. Are you familiar with those?
Yeah.
They're a nice clamshell composite boat.
Yeah.
But they're more of a performance kayak. They don't have that deep, that solid initial stability that a lot of our plastic right. sit-on-top boats have. And it's a different type of plastic, I think, called trilene. And anyway, we come into the Finger Cove, and it's a funny thing because most people who don't fish the coast, and a lot of them who do, don't realize that the direction of the swell is going to be the determining factor for how big the waves are on the beach for launching and landing. And when you have a bay that has a point, a lot of times that top point or bottom point, if it's coming from the south around here, protects you from the swell, whether it's a storm-generated or ground swell or just a wind swell. But if you have a finger cove, until you get into the open ocean, that finger cove is going to be calm about 360 days a year.
Yeah.
And one of those few days where it wasn't that calm, where the swell was pointed directly down that cove, Nick and I spent a bunch of hours out on the water rock fishing, saw some guys in a, three or four guys in a tin boat, and they disappeared, and we didn't see them for a few hours. We came into the cove to 6 to 8 foot surf, barreling down a bowling alley. And I looked at Nick, and there were like 15 people standing up on the bluff. I just yelled at Nick, hey, they've got scorecards up there. We got to make a clean landing. We never put our rods away. We never stowed our gear. And we got pushed around by the waves and pushed to the beach and both had clean landings. Turned out that the three guys on the tin boat before us lost their boat, had to be rescued, lost their catch, all their gear, and soaked their motor. And that's why they were waiting for us.
It said, anybody, you can go to google.com, type in Ocean Cove, California. You can get the map of this. I was rather surprised to see that there's the
Did I lose you again there, Isaac?
Looks like that was me that actually got lost. Sorry about that, folks. I was just saying GoogleEarth.com or Google.com, type in Ocean Cove, California. Pretty crazy looking little setup they got in that little cove. You can drive right down to it. You come off the hill down the water. Pretty protected launch zone. A majority of the time, like Dennis was just saying, looks pretty smooth in the pictures. Looks like a really fishy water. That kayakfishing.com Ocean Cove tournament, October 27th.
definitely looks like it's going to be an excellent time. And sounds like there's going to be some awesome food there. So you don't want to miss up on that. Like we touched on, Gerard the Paella guy. I saw that episode of Bobby Flay's Throwdown on Food Network. That was about 4 years ago. The man schooled Bobby Flay on paella in a heartbeat. It was no contest the whole way. Killer food, good times, and of course, plenty of kayak fishing. Haven't seen Dennis chime in just about yet, and we're down to the end of the show anyway. So I'm going to call it off this week. This is Isaac the Nothing Miller. You can find me at yakangler.com and, of course, kayakfishingradio.com. My co-host, Dennis Spike, kayakfishing.com, the guy that started the whole thing for all intents and purposes. Thanks for joining us for another Friday night Kayak Fishing Radio, the Wild West Show. We'll catch you again next week, 8 p.m. Eastern. And, of course, their shows Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern time. Don't miss out on any of the shows. You can also find all the shows backed up, rebroadcasted on iTunes. Until then, we'll check with you guys later.